Now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to Hastan and Neva Nijone Gosha Othia Nijone Gosha Othia. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Working day, I answered many questions from non-Indians concerning Indians. The questions vary and in some cases poorly stated, but usually add up to one question. What is an Indian? They say he is a person who doesn't work but gets a monthly check from the government. Others say that he is lazy. Still others say he's a man who got a raw deal from the government. Therefore, he deserves what he can get from the government. Also, others say that he's a drunkard who will never amount to anything. So therefore, the government should terminate him and let him make his own way in the white man's society. Myself, I do not see an Indian in the same light as any of these people. I see the Indian as a group of people, all different in their ways, but held together by a common bond called culture. I see the Indian as a group who fought for what was rightfully theirs and branded as savages. I see the Indians as a group who fought courageously against overwhelming odds and, after giving in and signing a peace treaty, lived to see the treaties broken one by one. I see the Indians as an individual who, when their country was in danger, went to the front voluntarily and gave their last full measure of devotion, not only in the Civil War, but World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, and Vietnam. I see the Indian as a group of people who are proud, and rightfully so, because they possessed the secrets of life the white man has never discovered. I see the Indians as a group of people because even in their broken English, they will tell you how important it is to gain an education in this modern world. I see the Indians as people who, when they cross the culture barrier into the dominant society, become the best in their chosen profession, whether it be law, medicine, politics, trader, athletes, or fighting for freedom. And when I think of the Indian in this light, I think of the question, what is an Indian? My chest suddenly expands, and I think, I am an Indian.
Music from Apache singer-songwriter A. Paul Ortega off his Canyon Records CD entitled Two Worlds, Three Worlds. The name of that classic song is What is an Indian? Great greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. My guest today in the studio is Mr. Muhammad Al-Dosani, a Muslim imam who grew up in Syria. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, host and producer of Wolf Mountain Radio, is very concerned about racism and xenophobia, the fear of other cultures. From my vantage point as an indigenous journalist and social justice activist, racism and xenophobia is on the rise in the world, especially evident in Europe and in North America. One example of this situation is the way in which many Arab and Muslim people are being stereotyped and mistreated. Negative images in the news media and racial profiling by police of people of Middle and Near East ethnicity is reminiscent of how Native American people have been depicted and treated in the past. Recently, a European cartoon of the Holy Prophet Muhammad exemplified the depth of disrespect of Islamic culture by the West. Arab and Muslim peoples are often depicted in a very negative portrait. For example, the image of a terrorist or camel riding just a thief with a big sword. These racist images perpetuate the myth of a dirty, desert-dwelling, primitive peoples to fear and distrust. Hollywood movies are full of such trash. It reminds me of how we so-called American Indians have been at times and continue to be depicted as bloodthirsty savages or as drunk and lazy, uncivilized, quote, Indians, unquote. It is time to get rid of derogatory and racist images of all cultures. Disrespect and prejudice towards another culture is often due to a lack of understanding of another people's worldview. Learning about other societies' cultural history, values, philosophies, and spiritual beliefs is the only way we human beings can come to appreciate and respect one another in order to live in peace with one another. This is the spirit of today's conversation with my guest, Muhammad Al-Dasani. I hope our discussion contributes to better understanding of Arab and Muslim points of views, which are not heard often enough in the media. The subject of what's now called Middle and Near East affairs is a very complex topic. There is a long cultural history, not to mention political, economic, and religious relationships in that part of the world. I do not profess to have a deep knowledge or understanding of either the historical or contemporary situations within this diverse region of the globe. However, as someone who is interested in international affairs and is concerned for peace, human rights, social, economic, and environmental justice, I try to learn about these issues and stay informed about events in this part of the world. This is especially important for those of us who live in the United States. American foreign policy greatly impacts the land and peoples of the Middle and Near East, as well as the rest of the world. Perhaps by learning more about the history and current situation in this part of the world, people will be able to see the similarities of colonialism elsewhere, such as the situation facing North American tribal nations. We here at Yad Kiddush Native Center may not agree with some of the views expressed by today's guest. We do, however, consider it very important to listen with an open mind to the comments of Mr. Muhammad Al-Dasani. I would like to now welcome Muhammad to Wolf Mountain Radio and ask him to first introduce himself to our worldwide listeners.
Thank you, Ones. My name is Muhammad Al-Dasani. I am originally from Damascus, Syria, and I've been living in the United States for the last 25 years, and I've been in Fort Myers, Florida for the last 14 years. I came back in 1991 and I settled there, and I'm enjoying this place, and I enjoy the friends I meet, and I'm glad I met you and enjoyed my visits and friendship with you, and hopefully we'll continue this friendship for a long, long time.
Muhammad, a moment ago in today's program introduction, I commented on the issue of racism and xenophobia. Certainly the history of the United States, America's manifest destiny, was predicated on racism towards my tribal native nations, which after 514 years still exists today towards American Indian First Nations peoples, as well as towards other people of color. Would you please talk about racism towards Arab and Muslim people in America?
That issue really did not come up to the forefront until after 9/11, events of 9/11. Being raised as a Muslim, anybody who was raised as a Muslim, they never experienced this, because it is a part of the Islamic teaching that equality among human beings, all human beings are brothers. So you don't see in your native countries or where you grow up any kind of discriminations that based on colors, ethnic origins, or even religions. But when you come to the West, you see it. Even if you don't see it, you hear about it, and you meet people who experience that firsthand. For us as Muslims, we didn't see much of it until after 9/11. Since then, things began to deteriorate for the Muslims in general, and the Arabs in particular. So we started experiencing different treatment from what we were expecting from the free world, if you want to call it the free world. So we all experience that right now, regardless of our social status, financial status, or how long we've been here. And some people were born in this country. They have no other country but this country. They are Muslims. They are from Arab descent, probably. And they were born in the United States, and they are experiencing the same thing that anybody was discriminated against is experiencing. We hope this is a passing stage. We hope it doesn't last, and we hope that equality and respect for every human being on this land will be achieved.
Muhammad, my next question is about the environment and Islam's beliefs and philosophy of protecting our planet's ecology, but we indigenous peoples consider the sacred web of life our Mother Earth. As you know, native spirituality is based on our relationships to the natural world, as we consider all our other species as our relatives. This is the meaning of our expression, Kinonwantokwasin, all of our relations, referring to the animals, plants, trees, fish and marine life, birds and insects, the land, waters and air. In English, the term biosphere encompasses this concept. I've heard the Islamic word khalaq, the creation, used as a metaphor for the word environment. The Islamic world makes up at least one-fifth of the world's community. Geographically, many Arab and Muslim countries, like most places in the world, are facing many serious ecological problems. Water shortages, water pollution, declining soil fertility, poor crop yields, expanding desertification, collapse of coastal fisheries, and even toxic pollutants, say from oil development as an example, are causing serious human health problems. Many Islamic nations are home to many endangered wildlife species. The loss of animal, plant, and marine life threatens our planet's biodiversity, as well as being a crime against nature. Within the past decade, I'm glad to say that there has been a growing movement of religious leaders becoming more concerned about the state of our biosphere. One descriptive phrase of this clergy conservation focus is caring for creation. There are now a number of coalitions between environmentalists and religious communities working together in conservation and environmental justice. One such fine resource center is the group FOR, Forum on Religion and Ecology, under the directorship of my friends Dr. Mary Evelyn Tucker and Dr. John Grimm. In the 1990s, they hosted, along with Harvard University's Divinity School, a series of conferences on religions of the world and ecology. One of those symposiums was entitled Islam and Ecology, whose proceedings book is an important view of Islam's insight into concern over the environment. FOR's website is www.religionandecology.org, and I would encourage all of our listeners interested in Islam's view of ecology and nature to read that very excellent symposium proceedings book. Again, you can order it from FOR, Forum on Religion and Ecology, their website, www.religionandecology.org. The Islamic Foundation for Ecology and Environmental Sciences, founded in the mid-1980s, is an important non-governmental organization that promotes education, training, conservation, and perspectives on the environment based on Islamic culture and traditions. Their website is www.ifees.u-net.com. Once again, the Islamic Foundation for Ecology and Environmental Sciences website is www.ifees.u-net.com. I've had the pleasure to meet IFES's founder-director, Fazlun Khalid, through my work with the International Earth Charter Organization and at a UN Environment Program conference. Fazlun has said, quote, "Allah entrusted man with the guardianship of the earth. We have to fulfill that trust now before it becomes too late," unquote. Muhammad, what are your thoughts about Islam and the environment?
Regarding Islam and nature, really, to get a true understanding how Islam views a lot of issues and concepts, one has or must study Islam in depth. To many people, Islam is a religion. Some people who practice some rites and rituals, and that's the extent of it. Islam is a way of life. Nature, I hope I'm clear when I say nature. Nature to Muslims does not mean just the environment that's surrounding you, the few trees, a pond, or a body of water, and the birds and stuff. Nature to us is the whole universe. To Muslims, in Islam, the universe is your guide, your teacher, that will show you the way to the Creator, to recognize there is a Creator, great Creator, behind this universe that makes it function the way it is, in this marvelous way it is functioning. We believe the whole universe was created for the sake of man. We are the supreme creature in this universe. That's what Islam teaches us. But that doesn't mean that we have the right to abuse the universe around us. Since the universe is the way and the guide that will show us to our Creator, we must treat it with the respect we treat our teachers, even our human teachers. Islam paid a lot of emphasis, even if you read the Quran, a lot of mentions about the trees. Even some of the trees, God called them in the Quran, that they are blessed or holy trees. The Quran speaks of trees, of birds, of bodies of waters, even the insects, even of the bees. Everything around us is mentioned in the Quran. The bees, for example, the Quran spoke of them 1400 years ago. how the honey that is the miraculous way that the honey comes out of the bees, that there is healing power in it for people.
Yes.
So this is part of nature and its products to us. The Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, the Prophet of Islam, told people, you cannot even step on ants for no reason, just to kill them for the sake of killing those ants. The Quran teaches us that all the species are nations like us, just like we are a race, the human race. Every species is a nation of its own. They have language, they have communications, and we have to deal with them in very, very delicate way. Some of them are very sensitive, and some other are more powerful than we are ourselves.
Yes.
And we all under the control of God, and God teaches us in the Quran, and His Prophet taught us through His years on earth, that we must deal with nature or earth itself as our mother, as I mentioned a while ago, because this mother, if you abuse your mother, she's going to be upset with you.
Yes.
And this mother is going to tell the Creator about the abuse you've done on it during your life, and will be responsible on every action we do in here. The Prophet did not even allow some of his companions, those are the most righteous people, to disturb a bird out of its nest. It was resting. He said, don't scare the bird. If they found a bird that is lost, they tried to find the mother bird for him. They used to take care of the little cat, the little dog. The Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam, may peace be upon him, said that there was a woman who entered hell, the hellfire, because of one act she did, that she let a cat starve to death. She locked the cat and wouldn't let the cat hunt for its food, and did not provide the cat with food to survive. So the cat died, and she went to hell. And he spoke of another woman who went to heaven, and she was a prostitute, evil woman, for one act. A dog was dying from thirst, and there was a well where the dog could not go down and get the water from it. The woman went down and got some water in her shoe and provided it to the dying dog. And as soon as the dog had some water, he thanked God for her. And because of that act, God forgave that woman and granted her living in paradise forever. The Prophet forbidden any human being, especially males, to urinate in a hole on the ground. There might be a creature that might be living in that hole. And by doing that, you will suffocate that creature. You cannot use the bathroom under a tree, because that will harm the roots of this tree and harm the tree itself. So many things we can talk about in nature and the way Muslims must deal with, that will reveal to people that this is a way of life, not for the harmony among people, like many people like to think. It's a harmony between human and human and nature, all of us with God Himself, our Creator. Now, unfortunately, you made just a comment here. Sometimes when I hear it, the West abused Christianity and abused Judaism. All the religions, the monotheistic religions and Islam, and including some of the teaching, probably because what I heard from you and what I learned from the indigenous people in here, so many ethics and so many values that they seem to be divine values. And Islam teaches us that in the Quran, God says that there is no land on earth was left without sending a messenger to it. So probably, although we don't have a record, we don't have any evidence, probably, and most likely, most of these teaching that we see in common between Islam and the ethics and the conducts of the indigenous people of this earth, they have common source.
Yes.
Everything, all these religions, all these teachings came from one source, our Creator. So it is not strange to see these commonalities between all of these religions. Unfortunately, man in the East and in the West abused this teaching and twisted it to serve its own purpose, their greed, their lust, whatsoever. So when we say, and when people take it against, especially Europe, when Europe and the West in general went against religion, they were not really fear. They looked at the religions through the actions of few people, but the religion in its source, all of these religions were one at the beginning, or one in source and one in essence, all to lead us to the Creator, to live in harmony among ourselves and among our nature. We are here for a short period of time. And if we find out what the purpose of our being here, that will make life easy and adapting to these values much easier for us, so we can pass those few years we're going to spend on this earth peacefully and transfer again to that world. You called it the spirit world. Mm-hmm. We call it the spirit world too. Mm-hmm. So when we go back and live in purity, mm-hmm, for eternity with our Creator, that's the purpose of our life, to be back with our Creator. This is a qualifying period of time, this life. Mm-hmm. The short few years we live, no matter how long we're going to live, 50, 60, 10, 120, 150, mm-hmm, we are here just to be prepared and qualified to enter that spiritual world. Our conducts here, among ourselves, between ourselves, and toward nature, and toward everything, is what will determine what quality of life we'll live in the spirit world. So basically, that's the basic teaching of Islam, to make you recognize what your purpose on earth, why you are here on earth for these so many years, and then what kind of life is going to be awaiting for you, mm-hmm, depending on how you perform in these few years you are on earth. I hope I can get the message right. The Creator created us for that purpose, and that purpose alone. And if we succeed, we will fulfill it, then we are promised a better life in the spirit world, or in the hereafter. We may come back in spirits and bodies. Nobody came back to tell us how they exist in there, but we believe our spirits will never die, will transfer there. Then our bodies later on might be resurrected and followed. And that's not hard on God, who created us the first time. He can create us again and again and again, as many times as he wants. But he told us we're going to be created one more time in order to be prepared in that world. Basically, that's what the teaching of Islam that I would like to relay now is, basically to answer this question, why we exist here.
Muhammad, as you were just sharing your views about Islam and the environment, how Islam is a way of life, what came to me is indigenous belief of how all life is sacred, how Native American spirituality, our ceremonies, are based on having reverence for the Mother Earth. It is the sense of sacred that is most important for following our cultural life ways, which we often call the Red Road, the cultural spiritual connection we humans have to the universe. Would you please share any more comments you may have about the sense of sacred?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The Prophet of Islam declared to all the Muslims that the whole earth, with no limitation to any spots or anywhere in it, that can be a temple. He called it a temple, meaning a holy place for prayers. That will be an incentive, a reason for every Muslim to treat earth with the utmost respect, mm-hmm, and preserve its cleanliness all the time, so it will be ready for any worshipper to worship on it. The earth, the whole earth, the Prophet declares that is a place of worship. And you know how we should treat the places of worship. Go to any mosque, any church, any temple, any synagogue. They are treated with the most respects and reservations, and they are kept always in the highest state of cleanliness for being holy. So as a temple, the earth is a holy place for every human being, so he can worship his Creator on it. That's a part of the teaching of Islam, how to treat the earth and respect the earth. And earth is part of the environment and part of nature that is surrounding us, and that extends to all natures. And we have to praise God for creating everything around. Look at how many kind of fish are in the oceans, and the colors and the beautiful things. Look at the flowers, look at the birds, look at the heavens and the skies and the stars and their formations in heavens. All of that was created for our pleasures. So if somebody gave you a painting painted by some famous artists, mm-hmm, and paid thousands of dollars for it, or hundreds of thousands in some cases for it, how would you treat that? You know how they guard it, and they have security systems around, yeah, it, and all kind of things, and they put some barriers of glass or whatever to protect it of the elements, so it won't be polluted and destroyed. How about this masterpiece of creation that created by our Creator? Shouldn't we be more careful with it than being more careful with a piece of a cloth painted by somebody that we may know or not know? That's how we should view the environment around us. It's the creation of our Creator. To the Creator, we respect it and treat it correctly.
Dashkash. In the Mandan words, I greet you, Dashkash. a greeting that we've used to many different people as they've traveled across this land. We call ourselves the Nuwata, the people. The Nuwata lived here. The Nuwata people, the people of the land. We lived here thousands of years, and when we did live here, we lived in the earth. Our stories say that we came from the earth. We climbed up the root of the grape. We climbed up that root, and many of us came up to this land until one who was too big was child. She was told to wait, but she wanted to bring her child into a new world, and that branch broke, and so many are still under the ground waiting to come up. And when we came up here, we didn't want to take the life of our brothers to build a lodge. We had always been protected by the earth, so when we made our lodges, we dug the dirt down. Our center poles were like the four directions. They were powerful. When we needed help, we turned to those four powerful directions. Those trees were cottonwood trees because they grow here along the Missouri River. They're very tall and they're very beautiful, and they give us homes and they give us shields and they give us weapons and they give us toys for our children and they give us medicine, they give us comfort, and they give us many things. They sing to us. Even in the middle of winter, we can walk and hear their beautiful leaves crunching under our feet, and we wish for the springtime to come when the leaves dance against each other in the sky, the sixth direction. The sky is so beautiful. It's blue. It's full of water. And when that water touches the earth, it makes all good things grow. So we live there in the earth, and we are like the roots of that grass, and we are like the roots of that tree. We depend upon that water to feed our children, to nourish us, and to wash us, and to cleanse us, and to take all those bad things away from us, because we are a part of the earth. Nuwata people, we always lived in our lodges here along the river. Down below the trees, and below that coyote land, when the wind blows so cold in the wintertime, freeze your skin to put it out there. But we come here inside the lodge. We laid here. Listen to the fire crack. We laid here and could smell the soup cooking. As we laid here in these lodges, we looked up and we saw the branches. And we dreamed about the day coming very soon when we would once again walk along those riverbanks among those giant cottonwood trees. In that hot, thick willows, the willows that give life to our people. And so from that earth came the Mandan, the Hiraata, the Nuwata, and the people of the willows. And so that's where we have lived for 1,000 years. And we hope that we will remember those places for 1,000 years. Because in those lodges lives our hearts. And in our hearts lives the memories of those who have gone before us. And in our hearts, we know that once again, when they take us outside, when our spirit leaves this world, we will return to the most beautiful home of all, our Mother Earth. So I'm very proud that I can say, I am one of those people. Those that lived in the Earth lodges, and those are the ways of our people. And if you come here to look upon this land, not all those hills are empty. Take a look. You might be able to walk inside. Listen. You might be able to hear the heartbeat.
Music from Nuwata flutist Keith Beer off his Mekoshe music CD, Earth Lodge. That song exemplifies the spirit relation we indigenous peoples have with our Mother Earth as people of the land, as people of the earth, now called American Indians. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest in the studio is Islamic scholar and imam, Muhammad al-Dasani. Muhammad was raised in Syria and now lives here in Southwest Florida. It is our pleasure to talk today with Muhammad and hear his views on Arab culture and Islamic affairs. I want to thank you, sir, for visiting Yad Kiddushi Native Center and being on the program. Muhammad, in the very near future, the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Peoples will be convened for its annual meeting. This year, 2006, the fifth UNPFII theme will be Indigenous Peoples and the United Nations Millennium Goals. In many ways, the Millennium Goals are a blueprint for building a better world in the 21st century. The Millennium Goals are like the International Earth Charter and other global initiatives. They are important calls for world peace, for social and economic justice, for the end of poverty and world hunger, for a healthy environment, and for the cessation of war and violence on the planet. These, of course, are not just the concerns of the world's indigenous peoples, but are of all peoples and cultures of the world. Looking around at the state of the planet now in 2006, it is hard to imagine a universal culture of peace. Throughout the world, there are many conflicts occurring. War, not peace, seems to be the major force in many places, such as the Middle East. Of course, since 9/11, Americans have become focused on what President Bush calls the war on terrorism. What are your thoughts about violence, conflict, and war? How does Islam consider warfare? And, sir, what is meant by the term jihad?
Talking about war is funny, because war now is attached somehow, or something stuck with the Muslim traditions, because the stereotyping and the misinformation that is going around. To answer that, we have to go back and see what Islam is about, really. The origin of the word Islam in Arabic means peace, to peacefully submit to the will of God. Peaceful submission, that's what Islam, the word Islam means. From that we can realize easily that Islam is about peace, is not about war. And war must be, and violence in general, and war in particular, must be avoided at all costs, whenever it's possible. Islam does not encourage waging war against nobody. Let's see what the purpose of Islam is. The purpose of Islam is to lead people and direct them in their relation with God, the Creator, our Creator. That will lead you, why are we here on earth? This is a question not only Muslims, that's every human being must ask himself. Yes, we exist on this earth, Mother Earth. To let you know, 1400 years ago, the Prophet of Islam, who didn't know the indigenous people of America was not discovered yet back then, and he didn't know, and they didn't know what to call earth back then. They didn't communicate, let's say. He called earth as a Mother Earth. He instructed the believers, everybody who believes in him, including those people who are around him, till the day of judgment, whoever comes and believe in him must listen to what he said. He said, I warn you, and I give you directions, basically, to be careful with the earth and how you treat it, for it is your mother. And on the day of judgment, she will bear witness against you and what you do to it. So we have to be very careful with the earth. That's part of the peace Islam or Muslim must exercise and live. Even peace with the environment, not only peace among humans and humanities. Peace in Islam is totally different from the concept of peace in the West, or the common concept of peace now around in the whole world. Peace now means stopping wars between two parties. Two warring parties will stop, and we'll call that peace. While peace in Islam is totally different. Peace in Islam is inner peace, inner harmony. Between human beings, and nature, between human beings and their creator too. A spiritual relationship, exactly. A spiritual state, actually, more than relationship. Having said that, so what's war? What the role of war in Islam? First of all, you cannot wage war for the purpose of war, for the sake of war. You cannot commit aggression against even animals. In Islam, you cannot hunt as a sport for the fun of it. You hunt for the need of food, and once you get your sustenance, anything you do after that is a sin. You're not allowed to hunt for the sake of hunting, for fun. You're not allowed to disturb a bird of its nest, much less to go and disturb another human being and take the safety away from him, or take his land away from him, or take his property away from him. You cannot wage war for the sake of war or for the sake of oppressing people and getting their properties or their land and exercise power against them. You only allowed to exercise war in self-defense, to defend yourself, your life, your faith, your property, your existence in general, because your existence is not physical existence only. It extends to your spiritual existence. You have to defend all the values you have, and you have to fight for the sake of the oppressed people. It is clear in the Quran when it calls for what we call jihad. We don't have war in Islam. We have a struggle. You exercise a struggle, either to defend yourself or defend the oppressed of weak men and women, those people who have no means to defend themselves. You have to stand up for them in Islam. Or a third reason, to spread the truth and the words of God. Where you are not allowed, which is basically like the First Amendment, the freedom of speech and the right of speech for every human being. You cannot stop any human being from saying his piece, expressing his opinions. You have to stand up and fight for that. And the first of those you stand up for is the words of God. It must be heard. And if anybody comes in the way, then you have to fight until it is allowed. Once it is allowed, you cannot continue fighting. That was exercised during the Prophet's days and some years after that. But after that, everything stopped. And a great example of that, when the Muslims went to China, the Muslim armies conquered Rome and Persia. And the reason was, letters were sent to the authorities, to the emperors of Rome and Persia, to allow the Muslims to come and tell the people and leave, and let the people make their choices. But that was refused. Therefore, the Muslims had to fight their ways in order to spread the word. That's it. They never ever forced any Muslim or any human being to adopt Islam by the sword. That never happened in the history of Islam. In China, when the emperor was informed that there are people who would like to come and tell people about the new religion, he allowed them. Therefore, there was no fight. And you have over 150 million Chinese right now in China. Indonesia, the largest Muslim country on earth, not one single fight happened in order to convert that country to Islam. It happened all because of one merchant. He came, spoke, and treated people with honesty, with dignity. They liked his way. They asked, why you treat us and you deal with us this way? He told them why. They liked the way he did it. They adopted his beliefs. And now Indonesia is the largest Muslim country on earth. Back to the human rights and the women rights, the stereotyping. I wish people emphasize on this. Right after 9/11, just the day after or 2 days after 9/11, the first meeting the United States president had with the head of state was a woman who was the head of the largest Muslim country on earth, the president of Indonesia. They don't tell you that. That's where how women were upheld in the society there. That's what peace and war are looked at in Islam. In the war in Islam, there is a code of ethics and code of conduct and combat rules you have to follow as a Muslims. You must. The Prophet said them very clear, the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, may peace be upon him, said those rules clear to the soldiers who went to the battlefield. You cannot kill non-combatants. You cannot kill women, you cannot kill children, you cannot kill elder men, you cannot cut trees, you cannot burn them, you cannot burn houses, you cannot. I mean, so restricted. And you have to fight face to face. And as soon as your enemies or your opponents show a sign that for a peaceful solution, you must submit to the peaceful solution. You stop. That's the rules of engagements in Islam. So war in Islam really is a concept that is foreign to Islam. In Islam, there's a war or a struggle, a jihad, to defend yourself, defend your property, defend your faith, and make sure that the word of God is superior for anything else, and the rules of God are superior to the human rules. That's all it is in Islam. And this war on terror, basically, unfortunately, in the Islamic world right now, is viewed as a war in Islam. And many Muslims, unfortunately, find in themselves that they are obliged to stand up and defend Islam, defend their properties, but unfortunately, their defense of justice is looked at as terror and is propagated as such.
Appreciate your visit today. I certainly can't understand your last comment
about how people standing up for their right of sovereignty and self-determination can be viewed as terrorists. That was a label that was put upon many of my heroes. For example, Geronimo is one that comes to mind, Native American warriors who fought for the well-being of Mother Earth and the rights of our people to live our cultural life ways.
Cochise was a warrior, a soldier out there. The old ones tell the story of the day of his birth. History calls him a renegade, a killer and a cheat. His fight for freedom led to his defeat. I am only one man from a people beaten down, trying hard to stay strong inside this skin so brown. But I still hear the voices of the heroes of the past, whispering so softly in the silence of the past. Hear me call, hear me call, hear me call, hear me call. Stand strong, never fall. You can count on me, you can count on me. Everyone who ever felt shame or took that wintry midnight walk that nearly killed the flame. Courage, all the brothers, find that spirit voice that calls you back to freedom. It's time to make a choice. Hear me call, hear me call, hear me call.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The song you heard prior to our Yat Kedichi Native Center program identification was entitled Cochise Was a Warrior, an honor song to that Ndé Apache warrior by Native American singer-songwriter Chester Knight from his Sound of America Records CD. Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. I want to again thank today's program guest, Islamic scholar and imam, Muhammad Al-Dasani, for sharing his thoughts on honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous voices. We hope our conversation contributed to more awareness and understanding of Islamic culture, which is in keeping with Yat Kadishi Native Center's mission of informing and educating people about different cultures and important issues in the world. Yat Kadishi Native Center welcomes your comments, suggestions, and questions. Please feel free to email us in order for us to hear what you think about Wolf Mountain Radio. Our email address is yatkadishi@earthlink.net. That's yatkadishi@earthlink.net. We also encourage our worldwide listeners to visit our website, www.yatkadishi.org, to learn more about our work. Once again, to learn more about Yat Kadishi Native Center and Wolf Mountain Radio, visit our website, www.yatkadishi.org. We shall conclude today's program with John Trudell's song, "But This Isn't El Salvador." As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, John Trudell was a national leader of the American Indian Movement. John was an outspoken defender of Mother Earth and Native rights. Many of us believe that the U.S. FBI was responsible for the death of John's wife and children from a so-called mysterious fire, which this song refers to. Historical documentation of the FBI's COINTELPRO program is evidence of the FBI's effort to combat AIM, such as the case against our brother warrior Leonard Peltier, who still after 30 years remains wrongly convicted in prison due to the FBI's lying and misconduct about the 1975 incident at Oglala on the Jumping Bull property. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kinawamontakwasin to all of our relations.
From Central America, after talking with my brother, suddenly remembering how they kill. Couldn't really say it straight before. They told me you were dead. I died. They told me your mother was dead. I died again. They told me the kids were dead. I died with each name. Fire. The government said accident. They lied. Duck Valley, my El Salvador. Our last kiss was our last goodbye. They came for you in winter's night. Winter's wind wailed in mourning. Government people searched for days. Scene of crime, digging through ashes, looking for body parts and disturbing evidence. We buried you all in a large grave while a blizzard covered us in a blanket of snow. How it stormed. Terrible pain in land of the free. Someone's should have noticed fewer women laughing. Someone's should have noticed fewer children growing up. But this isn't El Salvador. Warm, strong-willed woman, I still have memories you gave me. Maybe if we recognized peasant eyes, maybe if we recognized plantation lies, Archbishop Romero would have nothing on you. Trying not to cry, how will I ever stop? Ever see a wounded lion try hiding pain? Watch out, it doesn't work. But this isn't El Salvador. At times, I feel every embrace we share. At times, every tender moment still lives. Met a Sandinista who touched my cheek, kind of like you used to. Said to me, you are one of us. But this isn't El Salvador. Gentle woman, natural mother, natural world. Some people won't comprehend what happens. Who wants realities cluttered by acts of war? have to keep a lot inside at times. Not offending people with words they don't want to see pictures of. But this isn't El Salvador. Some people told me I'm strong to survive. I'm not strong. I'm not weak. No morality. No right. No wrong. One tear at a time I fall. I rise. But this isn't El Salvador. You loved your people in the face of the American dream. Fry bread and tortillas, some wars are the same. Who thinks Wounded Knee and Sand Creek happen only in history books? Is this not history? We live and die. But this isn't El Salvador. The first look you gave me, your eyes spoke, your spirit, your heart. My heart, our heart, there was no other way. Someone's say, we're with you, brother. We understand what's been done. Someone say, but this isn't El Salvador. This is America. Yes, I know. Almost 2,000 seasons. We fall, we rise. We fall, we rise.